So just for a second, obviously our schedule is kind of blown to bits at this point since I didn't get you guys stuff last week. I'm going to take a minute after class today and revisit, see where we're at after class. So what we'll end up doing is probably dropping one of the homeworks or combining a homework lab where some section of it's on your own, problems on your own, and then the lab pieces with your team. So just look for changes. I think it's not going to be any change in the network you're going to have to do over the same period of time. But the scheduling will change a little bit. It happens. So I appreciate your flexibility a little bit moving forward. Like I said, first, you guys know, probably first time I've run this class, so we're trying to figure it out as we go. Okay, so let's take a look. We're going to keep working through chapter 4, but in the process of that, loop back through to an example from chapter 2. So the first piece of this, section 4.4, is really basically just more details and examples of what we went through last time. So it looks at specific parameters and things like that. I think not worth really getting to in class because it is just specific examples of the general topics we've talked about. I think it is probably worth your time to take a look at it and see and relate the specifics to the generals we talked about last time. So what we're going to talk about or start talking about today starts in section 4.5. And the section title is Control of Transient Response. And I'm going to put that kind of in parentheses because we're not going to talk so much about the control yet. We're going to look at transient response for a given system. And then what are some things that affect that? And that's going to lead nicely into steady state response characteristics. So first, because we're going to use this system a few times throughout the remainder of the semester, and this section of the book sets up us having, you know, kind of assumes you've had to work this example, so we'll work it. Basically, this is looking at example 2.5. Is looking at and trying to determine the transfer function of a DC motor. So let's draw up kind of a schematic version of a DC motor and make sure I name the parameters where they need to be named to match the book. That's not necessarily going to be ground. And then we have on this guy, I'll talk you through it in just a second. Get drawn up first. F, and this motor actually has some kind of load attached to it, just a mass that has moment of inertia. The motor itself could have this as the shaft of the motor. This could be a load that the motor is attached to. So basically, just these two parameters change to reflect that. And then B is kind of frictional losses. And what we'll see is that B roughly equates to damping. We'll take a linearized version of those frictional losses. So it'll be just like viscous damping you would see in our mass spring damper type system. So this part of the circuit here who wants to get hawked down for that? That's the armature, right? So this is If you guys may recall, those of you that had 201, we looked at the internals of a DC motor. If this is a brushed DC motor, this is that connection that connects and disconnects as it spins. Right, so this is the internal, the electromagnet part of that motor. Right? And for a brushed, the kind of simple motors like you guys had in 201, those brushed DC motors, most of them are what we call armature control. And you control it by basically controlling the voltage between these two terminals, like we did. You can also have a field control DC motor. So you can think about like a brushless DC motor. We talked about a little bit of our stepper motor. This is a simplified version of what that might look like. You're actually controlling the voltage on the outside. Right, so you're controlling the field voltage instead of having permanent magnets like you do. So let's look first at a field control one. And well, let's look first at the general transfer function. Sorry. Yeah. All right. So what we're going to find is the velocity of the motor, torque of the motor, is proportional to this phi of t. And phi of t is the magnetic flux in the field, which is actually proportional to the current through that field. All right. So we can say the torque of the motor then is proportional to that. What we're going to do is define varies linearly, and it varies linearly based on the current through the armature. So basically, should match these terms. Okay, so there's our motor torque. We have some proportionality constant, which we'll see how that kind of comes out in a minute. We have some constant that relates the field current to the magnetic flux in the motor. And then given those and our two kind of current inputs, which we can control by controlling the voltages across these terminals, we can control the torque of the motor for all time. All right. So first question, is this a linear equation? We have a yes and a no. Why do you think not? Sure. So that's one way to look at it. Is I have these two currents that are both time varying. So if I was going to write the transfer function of this, right, I have these two terms that are multiplying each other. I can't do. They both depend on time, right? So these are kind of like my two control inputs, and they multiply. They're multiplying together, right? So we're not linear. Is the short answer. All right. How could we be linear? Like, what has to happen to the system? We could linearize it for sure, maybe about some operating condition. One of my currents is constant. And it turns out that's actually what's generally going to happen in motor design, right? Is that this is not an electromagnet in simple, cheap, brushed DC motors, right? These are permanent magnets that create this phi of t, right? Which is kind of like saying, hey, that current is constant. And you get to the constant magnetic flux. So we'll take the approach that, hey, the current is constant in the field for that case. For a field control motor, however, we're going to assume that the armature current is constant. So the voltage we have across the armature is now constant. Right? And we're going to be able to vary the torque by varying the field current, by varying the field voltage. Right? So this is how kind of a very simplified version of how a brushless DC motor is controlled. Remember, we control the feel around the outside of the motor, the stator of the motor, rather than the armature. So let's look at that case. Okay. So what we're going to say is we're going to look at a field current controlled DC motor. So we can look at our torque. And we'll write it as a cap by A, to indicate it's constant. And in the S domain, go ahead and skip over there. So all that's constant. How's that? What we'll see is that this term together it's called the motor constant. And this is something actually, depending on what kind of motor you're buying, will show up in the motor spec sheet. So there'll be some parameters. Some of these will show up in the motor spec sheet. So if you're trying to spec out a motor response, motor torque profile, particularly really good motors will give you that information in their data sheet. Okay. So, all right. Really what we're going to look for here is I want to know effectively the relationship between what voltage I apply to the field and how this thing spins, right? I'm trying to control this motor. So how am I going to get there? To that relationship. Right, so I need to figure out what IF of S is. Right? So how can I do that? Think back to your circuits. We have the inductance, though, the motor, field inductance, armature inductance, that we're going to have to count for both cases. You remember, guys remember how current? What's that?
Convert the resistor and inductor to polar.
To polar things.
Find the impedance.
Sure. So we can go that way. We can actually skip, right, that voltage is going to vary as the rate of change across this guy, right? So what you can get to is the V of F will start out and that relationship tells you kind of the rate of change of that is what matters for the voltage. So you can go from the time domain, if you didn't remember, kind of skip right here. Remember the kind of time domain representation of that. It might be a good exercise. Where RF is the field resistance, and again, LF is the field inductance. Okay. So we can obviously write, and we'll need in a minute, hang on to that for now. All right. So what else do we need to know? So we can get kind of the given, we can just pop this VF to the other side and figure out, given for a given voltage, we have a given certain current inside the motor, which would give us a certain torque. What else do I need to know? So that got me a torque. I need to, what I want, what's the output position and or speed, right? So what's that relationship? Sure. So, I'm asking how do we do that? Well, what kind of mechanical system is this? Yeah, it's just a mass with a torque on it, right? So this is just equivalent to TM, that mechanical system, right, where this has moment of inertia J. I just have an applied torque about the center of some mass that's rotating. Right. So, and I have some frictional forces too.
And then as you just said, that'd be equal to IGL.
Exactly. Pretty simple. All right, so we have the torque, and then opposed to that, we're going to have this kind of frictional force that we're going to model as linear, like a rotational damper, that's proportional to the velocity of that shaft. So if that is, let's label that point. Sum of the moments about 0.0. We're going to call that theta, the rotation of that motor. Well, that's equal to I about 0.0 alpha angular acceleration. What's the angular acceleration of this disk? Acceleration. How many dots? Theta double dot. All right. What's the moment of inertia about 0.0? J in this case. Theta, there we go. We have an equation of motion for a rotating mass with the torque applied to it and some frictional losses we're modeling as just damping.
Is that theta dot or just theta?
That's theta dot. Sorry, I lost the dot along the way. Okay. So I apply some torque, I can get some representation of how theta responds, right? How do I get to the Laplace domain of that guy, assuming zero initial conditions. So J is constant, let's say. Yeah, theta of S, yeah, you got that.
Plus B S theta of S.
Yeah, we'll go ahead and pop that all the way out. And then from there, we're able to write the transform function from the torque applied to the position of the rotor. Okay. So from there, I think we have all the pieces now. So we have the relationship given voltage. We're going to get some current output of that. That current gets plugged in here and will give us the motor torque. That gets plugged in over here and we get the position of the rotor. All right, so we can map that out now. Do that. Okay. So we're going to say our input is VF. So we know then we want the output of that, the next output is going to be IF. So inside this block, the transfer function. Goes and we get IF out. So there's just our field circuit, if you will. Okay. And we know that basically that current, just by the motor constant, gives me the motor torque. Right. So it just multiplies my constant Km. To give me Tm. Okay. We haven't talked about it so far, but I also could have disturbance torque. We're going to ignore that for most of the day, but know that could be there. Change things a little bit over here, but come on, it could exist. We'll ignore it. Okay. So we then have this guy. And that gives me my position in my rotor. Okay. So there's our block diagram representation of open loop field controlled DC motor. Right, and we're open loop because of why? Yeah, so we're not measuring our output and then changing our field voltage as a result of that to make it what we want. So in this system, we need to have a pretty good idea of what each of these blocks is if we're going to correctly pick a voltage. And we'll see later today, hopefully, that that's actually kind of hard to do, usually. All right. If I wanted to get... If I wanted to figure out the velocity, the angular velocity of the motor, how do I get to that? We have everything we need on the board already. Integral acceleration or derivative of position. What do we have transfer function for? Right. So the angular velocity, if we write it's just that. Right. So we know that the angular velocity is just the derivative of the position. So we can rearrange this transfer function and get a transfer function fairly easily without having to go back and go through the whole time domain stuff to get to angular velocity. Right. And that's some of the power of this Laplace domain thing. You can quickly switch domains, if you will, within the thing. So I also could write that over here and include that in my block diagram if I wanted. Maybe I was trying to control motor speed. So I take, let's leave that one up and we'll compare them. Do another one real quick. Can write it that way. Right, so kind of all I've done is exactly what we just talked through, is I know that omega is 1 over, the position is just the integral of the velocity. Why would I want to draw the block diagram this way, maybe?
Maybe you want to measure your angular speed?
Sure, so maybe I'm trying to actually control the velocity of the motor. Or maybe I'm able to measure the velocity of the motor better than I can measure the position. And that's what I want to feed back. So we can have essentially, without really any more work, we can get access to those internal variables of the system as well. And maybe feed those back or measure those or whatever. What also does this set us up to do pretty easily? Yeah, so I could write the torque to omega representation. I have that. Well, what this does is gives me the ability in a kind of visual way to see how it's all going to piece together the actual transfer function from my voltage input to my speed or position output of the motor. Right. And I can do my block diagram algebra here to get to that kind of all together, one transfer function that describes that relationship. All right. So let's look at output theta. And we just have a Km on top. So that. Or you'll often see, if you have a term like this, that one S brought out. That's going to have some special significance later. So you'll often just... see this written this way. If you can factor kind of a pure S, if you will, out on the numerator, you want to do so. And again, we'll see why that has some particular significance.
What about the R?
No. It's the S from here. All this is multiplying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. You also see this transfer function quite commonly written in another form. And it has to do with kind of the motor time constants, if you will. So we can say the field time constant is the inductance divided by the resistance. And we have the load time constant defined as the moment of inertia divided by the frictional coefficient. Then what we can do is rewrite that transfer function in terms of these two guys. And should have another S out front. S. Now you have those two time constants. And you'll see that you can get these pretty quickly too. These things will be defined, and if you're running a good enough motor, defined in that spec sheet too. So you can kind of get straight to this form maybe quicker than this. And actually, I've seen some motor sheets that will define these directly for you. Motor spec sheets. Okay. The other thing we'll see is that, well, let me ask you, what do you think the relationship between these two time constants is? Which one is faster, let's say? They do represent a time, by the way. We'll get to exactly what kind of time it represents soon.
Tau F.
Tau F is faster. That's just electrical stuff. So it's going to have a much higher bandwidth. It's going to move faster. So that means the time constant is going to be smaller, right? And in fact, it's usually so much, quite often, so much smaller that you can kind of ignore it, right? So TF generally, or tau F, the motor's electrical time constant is usually much, much lower than the mechanical time constant. So we effectively can ignore its effects, right? This guy goes to zero. And we can get a simpler form of this equation that represents that, that approximates the response. Okay. That's a fuel-controlled DC motor. So that's a really common example you'll see. We'll work with this throughout the semester. Trying to dig up a easily controlled, fuel-controlled actual motor. We'll talk about armature control in just a second. We have plenty of those. You'll be able to touch a few of those this term. Questions about that one?
I'm having a little trouble following how you went from there to there.
From here to there?
Yeah. From that equation.
So what we did...
you need to find your tau's.
We're dividing by... dividing everything by BRF. So if you want to get there, probably the easiest way is multiply out your denominator and you end up with a term, divide every top and bottom by BRF, and you end up with something you can factor into that. It's just algebra. There's nothing, no tricks going on, is what I'm saying. But this process, other than knowing that we would generally simplify down to these, is just like you'd solve any kind of interaction of kind of complex system in multiple domains. Right? So we have electrical and mechanical components, and you just need to piece together those relationships one step to the next. And then you can get to the total transfer function of the system. Right? So that the process we just talked through is the process, basically, that we'll use throughout the term. So let's do the same for our armature control motor. And these are more common. They're kind of cheaper and easier to control, generally, for DC motors. All the ones you guys had, the brush DC motors in Mechie 201, those of you that took 201, were armature controlled. Okay, all that's going to stay the same. We can leave it. All right. So now, what we're going to say is that the field current is constant. Okay. So this is going to be armature control. So now we have, what we're controlling is this voltage between these 2 points. So we end up with that instead. Where we're just we're saying that the field current now, IF, is constant, and the IA, the armature current, we're able to control based on controlling this voltage. Okay. Again, for armature control motor, we'll see that it's constant. Is the motor constant of that motor? So you have to be aware of what kind of motor you're looking at if you're trying to compare two different motors there, because these are both called motor constants but defined a little bit differently, obviously. And for permanent magnet DC motors, brush DC motors, this is going to be a function of the magnetic properties of those permanent magnets. Right, so for like the 201s you guys had in 201, you have permanent magnets in the stator part of the motor, their properties are what dictate what KM is. So this is definitely a fixed thing. It's not very, right? So you'll have some information about that. You'll get this on the spec sheet as well, KM, for armature control. All right, so let me explicitly add this just so. That voltage is what we're controlling, VA. So the voltage there, you can maybe trust me again, that this is just can be described by that equation. Same one we had on the field, just now through the So you can back out the time domain. The voltage is V equals IR plus.
Okay.
Yep. All right, where were we? What we have, though, in this case is one more turn, right? We notice that in this case, the motor shaft itself is actually part of this circuit. All right. What's the difference between a brushed DC motor and a generator? Electrically. Okay. Could I take a brushed DC motor, plug a drill into its shaft, and spin it and generate electricity? Yeah, you can, right? So kind of this, particularly if you're looking at a really simplified version of it like this, there is actually no difference, right? So if you're controlling a motor, what you're going to end up with is you tell the motor to stop, it has some inertia and wants to keep spinning, it's going to be spitting current back at you or spitting a voltage back at you, right? And you have to be really careful about that, actually. It's a good way to burn up power supplies if you're not careful. So that voltage also has this VB turn. Make sure I get the sign right. You can write it either way. And we call that turn the back EMF. All right. So what I'm going to do here is write this transfer function as that, where I'm kind of taking these two voltages together. And they do kind of, they do add. So this is a voltage, kind of effective potential across the motor. And let's see. Just to point out, that back EMF is usually proportional to motor speed. Yeah. Yeah, so I was just, if you saw me hesitate, you can write this either way. Whether the minus ends up being part of VB or it's minus, and right, so it's kind of like we talked about on the spring forces. Right, you can have that sign as part of the magnitude of the force, or you can kind of account for it inside the transfer function itself. So I'm actually following the book's convention. Yeah, I learned this with a minus sign, but trying to keep with the book a little bit. So plus sign and then any kind of negative effects are inside the transfer function or inside the Laplace representation of that voltage. Okay. So looking at VB, if we're saying it's proportional to the motor speed, what can we say about that in terms of our mechanical system? Relationship VB to omega, let's say.
Well, there's you need the power generated by the residual spin of the motor.
Sure. But what we're saying, think simpler than that. It's proportional to motor speed. So what's proportional to motor speed?
As a constant.
Some kind of constant. We can write that. All right. So we can then write, if we're going to plug that in, let's write what IA is. That's not what I want to do. What's going on here? Okay, that's fine. Let's make that explicit. We have that, and we have that the, so if we have the voltage, we can get some information about our motor. It's kind of this internal feedback we'll see. That's going to give us the current. This current gives us the motor torque. Motor torque gives us position output of the motor. So let's chain these together like we did for the fuel control motor. All right. So our input there is VA. How can we include this term, right? So we have VA is getting added to some stuff before it passes through the armature. One of those circles, yes? One of those circles. And that needs to be a minus sign, doesn't it? Because this goes over to this side. Sorry about that. So plus there, minus on this side. Is that what you were saying? Mm-hmm. Okay. I thought you were talking up here, because you can write it up here that way too. Sorry. Thank you for pointing that out. Sorry, I misunderstood. So yeah, minus all the way through. So you have plus there, and we're gonna have some stuff here. Okay. And hang on to that part of the block right now. All of that's going to give us, we know that sum is going to give us IA, right? Our armature current. Okay. And then, I missed one thing. That's going to give us VA plus this guy. We have to go through that transfer function first. That's going to give us IA, right? Okay, and then we know that IA armature current times the motor constant just gives us the torque. Torque of the motor. Torque just goes into our mechanical side of our transfer function, right? So that guy. And I'm going to write the kind of split version of this. Okay. Why did I do that here? The split version.
So you can break off the.
Yeah, so, right, this guy is just KB omega S, right? So I can feed that omega back. There. And of course, you could have not done that and played with the. Done the equivalent block diagram of taking the S term over here, including it there. Works either way. All right. With me so far, kind of, sort of?
So could there be a KB on the S, theta S, on the I?
Yes. Thank you. All right, so like before, this also helps us kind of see what the, and work through what the total transfer function needs to be, or is, right? We could do that, of course, by just plugging stuff in algebraically, but this helps us kind of visual check on what's going on, right? If we do that, now again, we're assuming that there's no disturbances. You could have some kind of torque disturbance here. Someone's cranking on your motor shaft or something. We're assuming that's zero for now. Okay, so let's write then. Transfer function, it's a little bit more complex. We have a feedback loop and all that kind of good stuff, right? But not too bad. KBKM, sorry. Okay. So just doing the block diagram algebra, you can get to that. Right. That might be a good check of your block diagram skills. Work from there to this. Make sure you get it right. All right. If we expand this out and collect terms, I'm going to write a different form of this transfer function, see if something looks familiar to you. Because it's going to give you some insight on how an armature-controlled DC motor behaves. You can also write this. So just multiply this out. You end up with the JLAS squared. Divide by that everywhere and to get the S squared by itself. End up with a form this way. What does this internal piece inside the square bracket, does that look familiar at all? The form of that. Sure. So we saw something like this where, yeah, so this frequency and stuff here, right? Exactly right. So if we look at that term, so it's like that usually. And that term ends up being omega n squared. And we kind of did that. We worked through that change for the mass spring damper system. I think we even got to that a little bit on day one. Right, and then worked another example of that later. So then what does that tell you about the response of a DC motor to a voltage input?
It's like a spring.
It can be oscillatory, yeah. It can act like a spring, kind of. And usually you don't want that. Right. It's going to depend a little bit about, you know, of course, depends on what the parameters are and things. Right. But yeah, you can get an oscillatory response in position from a DC motor by just applying a voltage to it. Right. Usually don't, because we know this exists and kind of designed against it. But it's there in the physics of that motor that you couldn't get a flexible response effectively. All right, so kind of something to be aware of. Okay. We'll define, we're going to define a time constant for this guy too. All right. And he's going to be tau A. And this is usually small. Almost always. Very small. Another way to write this is we can say, hey, that that RA is much greater than LA, if we're saying that that time constant is small, right? So what does that tell us? Can we simplify, get an approximate version of this transfer function? Right, so if RA is bigger than LA, this term dominates that. Now let's simplify this, basically. Right. So we can write it from that. We're able to write JS plus B. Like that, we can collect terms and simplify further if we need to. Which we'll do real quick because it'll show up and give us some information. I want to do I'm trying to skip steps so we can finish and get it right. Let's start that up. And so just kind of for me terms, we're going to define another time constant. It's kind of the mechanical total system time constant of this guy. And that'll let us write this. If you sub in there, we can also write, it's actually approximate, time constant version. Needed to get there for our next little piece of this puzzle. So there you can have essentially what ends up being a pretty good approximation, because this does hold true in most cases, of the response of a brush armature controlled DC motor to changes in voltage across its armature. Okay. Sorry about the couple of math hiccups there. Yeah. All right. So let's come back over here. What we want to look at now, we're actually going to get to the transient response of this guy, which is kind of where we headed when we started the example, kind of the purpose of getting these to control response. All right, so let's define another constant to allow us just to not write things a bunch of times. Let's say K1 is just a numerator here. So K1 is just a numerator there. We can write that transfer function then. So Yep. Where tile 1 and K1 are defined over there. Okay. Now let's say our objective. We want to look at this response, and we want to control this motor and keep a constant speed. That's a pretty common operation for a brushed DC motor. Right. So what then is our transfer function between our applied voltage and the speed of that motor? Same trick. You're multiplying by S. Yes. So we know, we can step through that real quick, and then I'll actually erase it so we have space. So we know that. We know that omega, the speed of the motor, is S times this. So S. Those guys would go away, and then we can write the relationship between omega and VA. So, all right. So, question then. I know I want this motor to run at a constant speed, some value. How do I get there? What's the first thing you're going to try probably? Maybe. I'm going to try something before that, though, before I start even designing feedback control systems and stuff. How to make the motor turn? Yeah, just drop some voltage across it and see how it spins, basically, right? And quite often, you know, if you're designing something that's going to have a million units made, you're going to pick a motor that you're able to do that and it maintains a constant, it spins at the speed you want, effectively. You don't have to worry about really controlling it so much. The toothbrushes you guys took apart, those of you that had 201, right? So what does that look like in terms of my input VA? It's a constant, so it's zero, and then it's a constant. What kind of command is that?
Bang, bang.
No. Step. Yeah, it's a step input, right? So it's zero, and we step out the step up the same constant and just hold it there, okay? So really what we're asking the response to a step change in that armature voltage. We just plug our motor wires into a battery. How fast does it spin? Right. And if we're going to, we might need some feedback control, but we're going to start there because we need to know some information about the motor. Right. Okay, so what, let's rewrite it. Like this. All right. Let's just say we're going to have a unit step. So the magnitude of our step is just going to be 1. We drop 1 volt or 1 unit of voltage across it. All right. What does that mean for this VA of S? What's the step command in the Laplace domain?
S.
1 over S. Right. So if VA is a step, need them here. And we have just a unit step, that's the one on top. You could scale that. If it was a 5-volt step, you could put a 5 there. It works just the same. Okay. So then at our omega S, we're going to start spinning according to that. All right. We have some representation, and if you're going to simulate that in a computer, actually just getting to here is all you need. let's kind of do this one. This is simple enough for us to get some idea of how it's going to start spinning by hand. And a nice check on some of the stuff we did a little while back. All right, so how do I get from this to the time domain? Inverse Laplace. Okay, you probably could find a table somewhere that had this guy. It's common enough where you could find it. The table in your book, though, doesn't have that one. Sorry to spoil it for you. So how do I get the inverse Laplace transform then? I think these guys had it. Yeah, partial fraction expansion. Right. Okay. So I can write omega s as something. How do I do partial fractional expansion? Sure. So let me write this way again to make that a little bit more clear. 1s plus 1. So I can write, or I could write it, not that fine, that's fine. So I can have, let's say, a1 over s. Factor the denominator, and I have those two constants now. Okay. How do I figure out what a1 and a2 are? a1 is equal to that doesn't sound quite right.
Or 1 over s.
Yeah, so you have, right, it's s times the entire original transfer function evaluated at what?
Zero.
It'll be 0 in this case. So what does that get you? S is 0. All right, so those guys cancel. That guy goes to 0.
K1.
How about the second term? Times the whole thing again. S evaluated where? Yeah, it's where does that term go to 0 at? Yeah. Where is what's the pole there? Right. So I can plug all that in. Let's see. We can do some cancellation. That guy goes away, that guy goes away. We have minus K1. Because that's a negative there. K1. Something doesn't look quite right. So you have the S remaining in the bottom. You should plug this in. There, tau 1 over tau 1, K1 divided by 1, yeah, okay. Okay, that's going to be okay, I think. All right, so plug those terms in. Now I'm able to look up these are the ones, right? We got the simple enough transfer function where we look those up in that inverse Laplace table. And we'll get something that looks like this. for that response. So now there's our response to a unit step change in voltage for armature control DC motor. All right. What does that tell you about that response? Just looking at the equation. Yeah, it goes to K1. So as T goes out to infinity, right, this exponential term goes to zero. Right, so we eventually, given an infinite amount of time, get to K1. But we're exponentially approaching it. What does that say about how, can you say anything about how fast that's going to happen? What dictates how fast that will happen?
Tau,
right. So you look over here, what's tau? Well, RA, we don't have a whole lot of control over. KM, I mean, these are kind of physical properties of the motor, right? But yeah, we can control those maybe if we're starting from what's my custom motor need to look like. But quite often, you don't have a lot of control over those. You can start maybe picking those off a spec sheet and picking the motor closest to what you need. One thing I have maybe have control over here is if there's some kind of load attached to the motor. I want the motor to spin up to the speed faster. I can try to start thinking about how can I reduce the moment of inertia of my load, which and often you don't have a whole lot of control over that either. Right. So I'm kind of stuck in this sense. I'm going to get some kind of exponential response up to some value, which that value I'm not even sure it's going to be the value I need so far. And it could be really slow. So where does that leave me? What can I do? You had the idea 30 minutes ago.
Oh, man.
So we got the time response. So we had Laplace domain, we took the inverse Laplace and got to here. So I'm talking about kind of the overall control of the motor. I'm saying this is kind of just open loop control of the motor, right? I'm just dropping voltage across the terminals. So if I want maybe a faster response, what can I do? What's the name of this class? Control system. I can control it. Yeah. We can start maybe have some feedback of omega, right? And adjust my armature voltage based on the speed. Or if we're doing position control, I can do it based on the position. All right. We'll come back to how that exactly is going to work. Okay. I think that's going to be a good place to stop. So let me answer questions for you first. We got a couple minutes.
So how are you defining tau?
Well, remember, so RA is the armature resistance of your motor. That's just a physical property of the motor itself, how it's wound. The motor constant, we erased it, is a combination of properties of the motor itself. Yeah. KB is the back EMF kind of gain. You don't really have control over that either. Right. B is the internal frictional losses of the motor. You can try to reduce those, right? But you don't necessarily have a lot of control over those either. So really the only thing in this equation that you might be able to have some control over is the moment of inertia of whatever you're trying to spin.
I mean, why is that tau? Why is tau RA times J over, what determines what tau is?
So the short answer is that if you look here in this equation, and someone some long time ago got to this equation, and knows that this is going to be an exponential response. And that tau here in this kind of time response dictates how that tau will give you a time constant for where you get to from zero to some percentage of your final set point. So we can look. If you look, may have seen it in DiffyQ, probably just brushed over it because it's kind of more a physical phenomenon than you might have seen in DiffyQ. But this tau, in this kind of response, you might see it So you look at this exponential plot, right? That tau defines a time, right? And if we hadn't made that substitution, what you get is just all this stuff there. So somebody saw, some physicist or mathematician, most likely, saw this kind of response and said, well, oh, that's actually, we write it this way, that is the time constant of the motor, how quickly it gets to, I forget the percentage, some percentage from where it was at to its final set point.
So you get the tau from working backwards.
Yeah, so somebody, some long time ago.
So we will not be required to find the tau.
What do you mean? Well, I think at a high level, yeah, you should be able to work through a problem like this. Would I expect you to be able to pick out necessarily, oh, that's an exponential response, so that I need to group these terms together into a tau? Probably not, yeah. But being able to piece together a mechanical physical system into a block diagram.
Well, yeah, no.
Yeah, of course. You need to know how to do
it. It's a work problem. We're not going to be expected to rearrange that with tau.
Sure.
Time that it reaches a steady state or whatever,
yeah.
Or a constant.
Yeah.
But I don't know how, like, what determined that it was that specific thing. Because for the other example, tau was different.
Yeah, because the system was different.
Right.
Right.
So what I'm saying is,
I
wouldn't be expected to look at a system and be able
no,
to determine
I wouldn't
tau.
Expect you to know that, no. I would expect you, however, to be able to look at a time response like this or a plot of this kind of time response and be able to pick out what's tau on that. And we'll get to that when we start looking at transient plots of transient responses.
But, I mean, we could, even if we didn't rearrange that with tau, we could probably work through and still get
yeah, you'll just response. Have all those terms over there here rather than tau. It should take you a lot longer to write it, but it'll be the same. But, again, when we get to actually plotting time responses, which we'll do next week, you should be able to pick this tau off a plot because it is a property of that response. Other questions? Yes, ma'am.
You can't really control tau too much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel like, are we just neglecting disturbance right now?
Right now, yes.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, so we're not considering that there's actually any kind of dynamic loading or anything like that.
Okay.
This is just spinning up the motor. And maybe with some kind of thing attached that has a moment of inertia larger than the motor shaft itself.
So the thing that's coming to my head at the moment, this is very similar to a drill, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this is, most drills are brushed DC motors. You just drop the full battery voltage across the motor and let it go. I mean, it goes to a gearbox, but yeah.
Well, because I was thinking about, so there's a very specific drill that they're talking about for downhill accomplishments. Last night, they had it because they don't want it to have those long strands of metal.
Yeah, so they peck at it.
So they peck at it.
Yep.
Is that a control system that they use for that?
Yeah, so they'll have a pretty high gain, which is the next two pages of our notes, why that matters. Feedback control system that allows you to kind of compensate for those rapid changes in J effective, J and B, in loading, disturbance forces. You got a question?
Yeah, it's kind of unrelated.
Yep. Look for an email. It will likely get pushed or just paired back to what we've done through today. Yeah.
Also, when do you think you'll have the homework two answers
up? Tomorrow, probably. Yeah, so look for, like I said, I'm working through what the new schedule needs to look like since I didn't get notes to you guys last week. And so those two changes propagate through, basically. Other questions? All right. See you guys next week.